Okay, hi everyone. My name is Rebecca Winter, and thank you so, so much for joining me in the second of our series, which is Parallel Figures in the Tanakh. I just had a question of whether or not you get a copy of the source sheet. The source sheet can actually be downloaded from the screen in this button right up here, right on the top left-hand corner of your screen. There's a download PDF option, and you could download the source sheet from there. Okay, does that explain it? Oh, there's no sound. Oh, sorry, that's strange. Sorry, hang on 1 second. Just gonna ask tech. Okay, so apparently the icon to download a sheet is disabled. Is that what you said, David? Yeah. Okay, so I'm not sure why that is. I'm really sorry. Can you see the sheet that's on the, can you see the sheet that's on the screen now? Okay, good. So afterwards, if you want, I can just send you a file in your email. Yeah. Oh, okay, great. Okay, so we'll do that. I mean, I'm really, really sorry that you can't hear me. I'm not sure why that is. It seems like David can, so I'm just going to continue, if that's okay. So basically tonight we're going to be talking about a different pair of characters who I think are an interesting pair to kind of compare or contrast in the Tanakh. And the characters I'll be talking about tonight are Paro and Shlomo HaMelech. So before we really start with getting into the comparisons between them, or rather the comparisons between the ways that they ruled. I'd like to just start off, sorry, okay, I'll try to, is that better? Sorry. So before we really start with the comparisons, I'm going to first just jump in and start talking a little bit about the prohibitions or the limitations that God puts on a Melech Yisrael, on a king who comes into reign. And the initial limitations or prohibitions can be found in Dvarim, Parak 17, Yud Zayin. And Hashem really talks about three things that a king cannot do. And if everyone can just look with me at source one, Hashem says, "Rak lo yaldeh sussim v'lo yashiv et ha'am Yisraima." Rather, the king cannot have too many horses and cause the people to return to Egypt. And then, if we skip to Pasuk Yud Zayin 17, "V'lo yaldeh nashim v'lo yasur levavo v'kesef v'zahav lo yaldeh me'od." So basically, there are three things that a king cannot have. One is too many horses. The second one is too many wives, and the third one is too much money. And interestingly enough, there seems to be this kind of addendum or this kind of extra part of the pasuk when it talks about not having too many horses. The pasuk continues and says, "Rak lo yadel asusim, v'lo yashiv et ha'am Mitzrayim." And the king should not return the people to Mitzrayim to Egypt. Many of the Parshanim pick up on this specific prohibition, of the king not having too many horses, and they explain that there's a connection between having too many horses and returning Bnei Yisrael, or returning the nation, to Mitzrayim. In fact, the one source I brought in is the Midrash Tanaim. It's one of the Midrashim. It's also cited in the Midrash Hagadol on Sefer Zohar. And if everyone can just turn to source two, you'll see that the Midrash makes this connection between having too many horses and between the king returning his people to Mitzrayim. So lo yashivet ha'am Mitzrayim in source 2. Im marbelo susim, if he has too many horses, machzir et ha'am l'shi avudam l'mitzrayim, said the Mitzrayim hu omer, so if he has too many horses, then that will ultimately return the people to Mitzrayim. Hu amer, like it says in a passage in Shemot regarding Mitzrayim, by aspet ha'am b'chol eretz Mitzrayim, l'koshesh kash l'tevan, And the Midrash brings in a pasuk where Bnei Yisrael were made to work extra hard to collect straw to build these, different arim and the different things that they had to build in Mitzrayim. About horses, the Midrash makes the connection and says in Malachim Aleph, Perek Hey, it says, "Behasta arim behateven lachbitzim belarechet," that he had this, that he had seor and teven, meaning he had this wheat, and it was for his tzitzit. And who is this talking about? This pasuk in Malachim Aleph is talking about Shlomo HaMelech, who had many horses, and therefore he had to have a lot of food and a lot of wheat and a lot of straw for the horses to lay down on and to eat. And the Midrash makes this interesting connection between Shlomo HaMelech, who had too many horses and needed to have straw for the horses, and between Bnei Yisrael, who had to work extra hard to collect the teven, to collect straw, to work in Mitzrayim during their working time in Mitzrayim, during their shiabud in Mitzrayim. And there seems to be this interesting parallel that the Midrash draws, and it tries to explain how having too many horses will ultimately lead us back to Egypt in a very cryptic way. It's almost saying that, well, Shlomo had so many horses and he needed to collect so much teven, and that reminds us of Bnei Yisrael, who also had to collect a lot of teven, a lot of straw in Mitzrayim. And it seems kind of like a cryptic connection that the Midrash brings, but nonetheless a very important one, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. And before we talk about this connection between Shlomo HaMelech having too many horses and the connection of bringing the nation back to Mitzrayim, I'd like to just say briefly that when we think about Shlomo HaMelech, automatically, I think, I at least, automatically think of this fantastic leader, this powerful man, somebody who really is, he built the Beit HaMikdash, he built the temple, he wrote tremendous, tremendous Tzarim in the Tanakh. We credit him for writing Mishlei, Kohelet, Shir HaShirim, really, really a very spiritual man. The person who came after David HaMelech, who was really hanging on the coattails of David HaMelech, who really was an amazing man, and we say he was Ein Navan L'Chacham Kamoh. There was nobody as smart or as brilliant as Shlomo HaMelech. Really an unbelievable and amazing king. And I think that something that's often overlooked about Shlomo HaMelech are some of the sins and some of the bad things that he did during his time as a king, even during the time that he was building the Beit HaMikdash. And really, the Midrash touches upon one of those things, which is that he had too many horses. And it touches upon it, if you see the source, comes from Malachim Aleph Perek Hey, the beginning of Perek Hey, which was around the time that Shlomo was actually building the Beit HaMikdash. But nonetheless, Shlomo, right at the beginning of his reign, already collected these horses at the beginning of his reign. And I'd like to just take the Midrash a step further than it went, where it compares Shlomo, kind of his reign of having too many horses, to the reign of Paro. I'd like to take it a step further and really delve a little bit into Shlomo's reign and see what was going on during the time that Shlomo was doing all these wonderful and amazing things, during the time that Shlomo was being the strong and powerful leader that he was. I want to see what else was going on during that same time. And we'll talk about why that is. So before we start, though, I'd like everyone just to turn to source 3, just to refresh our memory about what it was like during the beginning of the time that Bnei Israel were working in Mitzrayim, during the beginning of the time that they were slaves in Egypt. And I just want to point out a couple of things about what happened to them during the reign of Paro, Melech Mitzrayim, all the way back in Sefer Shemot. So I'll just start from Pasuk Yod Aleph, source 3. Vayasimu alav sarei nisim. And Paro put on Bnei Yisrael taskmasters, sarim nisim. The word nisim also reminds us of the word mas, meaning he put on them masters of taxes. And Parshanim also points out that this was really the first stage in the shiabud, the first stage in the slavery process, that really Paro put a tax on Bnei Yisrael. Ve'yasinu alav sarim nisim, leman anato b'sivlatam. Then, Vayiven Arei Mitzkanat LaParo, Epitam V'et Ra'amseth, And they built these Arei Mitzkanot, which the translation here says that they're store cities, two store cities, Pitam and Mamsa. And then the Kasha Ya'anila talk, Ken Yodeh V'chan Yisrach, Bayat Chutzinit Bnei Yisrael. And again, as part of trying to afflict them, Bnei Yisrael just kept on multiplying and multiplying. Vaya'avidu Mitzrayim et Bnei Yisrael b'parach. And Mitzrayim enslaved Bnei Yisrael with really, really difficult and hard labor. Farach, as Rashi explains the word farach, as really back-breaking labor. And there seem to be really three stages in the Shiabud of Mitzrayim. The first one seemingly being this Sarei Nisim element, this kind of tax element, which was maybe a lighter type of labor. Then the Arei Mishkanah, which were building these store cities. And then really just this pointless back-breaking labor, Parech. And that seems to be kind of just to remind everyone of the gist of what it was like to be a slave in Egypt. And now quickly, I'd like just to turn to what it was like for the people living under Shlomo's reign during the times of during the times of the first temple when Shlomo was the king. And I'd just like to first point out that one of the main things that Shlomo HaMelech did during his reign was actually tax the people that he was leader of and ruler of, and also Bnei Yisrael, and not just Bnei Yisrael, but all of the nations around him. And that really isn't a bad thing, but it is something that Shlomo did, and as everybody sees here in source number 4, firstly, if everyone could just look at, in that source, in Perek Hei, Pasuk Kav Zayin, it's a little bit lower down, I'll show it to you. For example, it says, Vaya'al Hamelech Shlomo Mas Mikol Yisrael, Vayhi Hamas Lefina Rabi. So he puts this tax on Bnei Yisrael, a levy on Bnei Yisrael, and he takes 30,000 men. That's just one example of a time that Shlomo really puts a tax on Bnei Yisrael, but also a tax on all the Amim around him. That was just one example. We also see, though, that Bnei Yisrael and also the nations around Shlomo are also called Avadim to Shlomo. Ushlomo, if you look at the beginning of source 4 in Parakei, Ushlomo haya Moshe v'kol ma'machot min ha'na'ar eretz plishtim v'ad gvul mitzrayim. And Shlomo really was the Moshe, he really was the ruler. Magishim mincha v'ovdim et Shlomo kol yimei chayav. They really served him all of their days. They really served him. And there are many, many examples, I didn't bring all of them, where Bnei Yisrael, not just Bnei Yisrael, but also the Amim around Shlomo are called their Avadim, are called Ovdei Shlomo, not just Ovdei Shlomo, but the Avadim of Shlomo. And we'll see more examples of that, stronger examples of that a little bit later. Something else that's very interesting that we see in the Pesukim when it talks about Shlomo, if everybody just turns to Pasuk 30, Pasuk Lamed, a little bit further down in source 4, we also see this word that repeats itself during the Malchut of Shlomo. Levad misarei hanitavim mishlomo asher al hamelacha shloser alafim ushlos me'od haradim ba'am asim ba'melacha. And this word radim is repeated a few times. I'll explain that. Coming off a different, kind of a different topic here, but besides Shlomo's chief officers that were over the work, 3,300, who bore rule over the people that wrought in the work. Meaning that Shlomo had these officers, Shlomo had 3,300 officers who were over certain people who were working. The word rodin, that they were, that they bore rule over other people. Meaning that Shlomo had officers who looked after the people who were working for him. This word rodin is repeated a few times during the Malchut of Shlomo, and it reminds us, the word rodin is not used very often in Tanakh at all, and it reminds us really of this word that's used in Vayikra Perek Hapeh, when Hashem talks about an Eved Ivri, how we should treat an Eved Ivri, because remember, we were slaves in Egypt. What should we not do to an Eved Ivri in Leviticus 25? Do not rule over him, again that word rodeh, but what bifarech, do not give him that back-breaking labor that we remember from Mitzrayim. This word radeh here in Vayikra, connected to the word parech, reminds us that what Shlomo was doing maybe when he was being radeh, when he had these people who were radeh over other people, he really did kind of almost sink to this level of perhaps parech. Again, as we see that the word radeh is not used very often in Tanakh. Another striking similarity that we see between the way that Shlomo ruled the people and the way that Paro had his set up his rule over Bnei Yisrael is, again, in this time in Malachim Perek Tet, it talks about all the different cities that Shlomo had, and it also has an interesting word, Pasuk Tet, the Ekol Arei HaMiskenot Asher Hayu LeShlomo, Asher Chashach Lidnot Yerushalayim Ubalavanon Ubachol Eretz Mamshalatot. And Shlomo also had these store cities, the Arei Miskenot, just like Paro had Arei Miskenot Pitam and Naamseth. So too, Shlomo also had these Arei Miskenot, these store cities. Again, an Arei Miskenot is not a word that's used very commonly or very frequently throughout Tanakh. Again, giving us this reminder or this taste that something was going on during the times of Malchut Shlomo that was similar to what was going on during the times of Paro. And we see that really, even before Shlomo's great downfall, where really the split of the Malucha and the division of the Malucha is attributed to Shlomo HaMelech and to his sins, and we'll get to that in a second, but really even before Shlomo is ultimately punished for being the one who was instrumental in the division of the Malucha, and the Malucha and the kingship being split up between Malcha Yehuda and Malcha Yisrael, we see that even while he was building the Beit HaMikdash and being this amazing, powerful, and fantastic leader, we still see these underlying tones of something negative that was going on, starting all the way from Perek Hay in Sefer Malachim, when our Midrash pointed out to us that Shlomo took all of these horses. And it really, after Shlomo takes all of these horses, we really see all of these kind of subtle reminders of small things, both here Deb Obafarech, the mass that Shlomo puts on Bnei Yisrael, and again, the Arei Miskenot that Shlomo has. And we see this underlying tone of kind of an underlying and subtle comparison between Shlomo and the Shiabud Mitzrayim, which is kind of bothersome. I mean, I don't think the comparisons are outright or maybe people aren't so convinced by the comparisons, but I would argue that the comparisons are definitely there. And I'm going to strengthen that argument a little bit later, but I just want you to keep that in your mind as we read on and we see kind of the ultimate downfall of Shlomo HaMelech. In Perek Yod Aleph, I put that as Kings 1:1, but it should really be, source 5 should really be Perek Yod Aleph, Kings 1:11. We see Shlomo's second downfall. First he takes the horses, and then what happens to Shlomo? Let's read on. The HaMelech Shlomo Ahav Nashim Nachuyat Rabbah. The et ba para, moaviyat, admoniyat, admoniyat, sidoniyat, lefitiyat. So Shlomo also loves all of these women, again reminding us of the second command that Hashem tells us, lo yardel on Hashim, a king should not have too many wives, but Shlomo loves women, especially the Tanakh points out, the et ba para, aside from ba para, he loves other women, but especially he loves ba para. A source I did not include here is that he actually builds Pat-Para a special palace and moves her to that palace in the same chapter in Perek Yod Aleph, and you can look that up to see that. But Shlomo seems to have this great affinity towards Pat-Para and towards Mitzrayim in general, which is in and of itself very interesting as we talk about our parallels to Mitzrayim. And because of these nafsim, we'll just skip to Pasuk Bav, Vayash Shlomo Harad Enei Hashem, the Lomileach Rei Hashem, Kedavid Aviv. And Shlomo does bad in the eyes of Hashem, and he does not go after Hashem like David his father. And because of this, actually, in a source that I did not include, because of this, Hashem comes to Shlomo and tells Shlomo that the Malucha is going to be torn in half, that still Hashem will keep his promise to David that the Malucha will follow in his name, but Shlomo will only have one tribe, Yehuda and Benjamin, we see later, whereas Yisrael, the other side of the Malucha, the other side of the kingship, will have 10 tribes, the northern tribes. And really, Shlomo HaMelech is responsible for the division in the Malucha because he turns away from Hashem, and he turns away from Hashem by, we see this process of first taking too many horses, then taking too many wives, and it's ultimately because of that, that Shlomo HaMelech, that really leads to Shlomo HaMelech's downfall. I have a question here. Why are the Jews so consistently infatuated with the Egyptians in particular? I think that's a fascinating question that kind of gets us a little off topic. I will just say, though, that the Egyptians for Bnei Yisrael really represent kind of our, the way, the derech, and the, the path of the covenant that we make with Hashem, and really the formation of the Jewish nation as a nation. And we see really that because of Mitzrayim, that it's because of our exodus from Egypt, that we, or through our exodus of Egypt, that we really become a complete nation, and we ultimately make it to Har Sinai, make this covenant with God. And it seems to be that Bnei Yisrael are always kind of infatuated with that, kind of the initial shiabud, or initial enslavement, and that process of redemption that basically makes them a nation. I don't think it's just Bnei Yisrael themselves that have that infatuation, but the Tanakh itself in many, many instances and many, many places. Just the Asher HaDibra themselves say, Anokhi Hashem Elokecha Asher HaTeticha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I am God who took you out of Egypt. I mean, the first of our commandments talk about Egypt. So let's just leave it at that for now. So we see really that Shlomo's downfall kind of doesn't just come as, it doesn't just come about in Perek Yud Aleph, where Shlomo takes too many women and then they lead him astray, and he does by Yashlomo HaRabe and Hashem. But it seems to be this slow progression stemming from Perek Hay, where he takes too many horses, then starts to maybe treat the people in a way that's not completely kosher, or not completely as we may have wanted a king to treat the people, and then eventually leads him to take many, many wives, the et bat paro, and that eventually leads Shlomo vayaz para vehine Hashem, and that leads to our division in the Melucha. And we can see really that Bnei Yisrael's attitude towards Shlomo, we don't really get a lot of feedback of how Bnei Yisrael reacted towards Shlomo during his reign. But after his reign, we get an interesting insight into how Bnei Yisrael viewed Shlomo. When Bnei Yisrael approach, as a group, approach Rechavam, who's Shlomo's son, and they say something interesting to him. They say in Pasuk Dalet in Perek Vav, verse 4, Avicha hitsa aleinu. Your father was very, very hard on us, they say to Rechavam, Shlomo's son. Please be easier on us than your father was, who gave us such hard work. Please take off this heavy yoke that he put on us, and we'll be happy to serve you. We just don't want to continue to serve in the way that we served your father. Really, they emphasize as slaves almost, and with such hard work. They seem to even be talking about perhaps physical work. It could be pointing to the heavy taxes that Shlomo put on them. We're not really sure. But it seems like they view themselves as perhaps very oppressed, with a heavy yoke on their shoulders when they were under the reign of Shlomo. Of course, we know that Rechavam HaMelech doesn't actually listen to the people complaining, and that's a very negative thing. And instead, the people go after Yerubbaal, and Yerubbaal and Rechavam become our first kind of division in the kingship following Shlomo. But it's an interesting insight into what the people really thought of Shlomo HaMelech during that time period. And that really they viewed him almost in a way that he was very, very hard on them, a very strong leader, perhaps too strong. Perhaps, as I was saying, in some ways reminiscent of the way Paro was towards Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim. Now, I think that people are thinking that that's a very harsh thing for me to say, that Shlomo kind of almost was like Paro a little bit. But I think that the Nach really wants us to think about that in an important way, really analyze the story, really analyze Shlomo's reign, to see Shlomo kind of as having this almost split personality, or these two different characteristics, or perhaps the way I would like to say it, as Shlomo really was a very powerful king, but he kind of wielded his power, and he kind of let his power loose in different ways, some of which were very positive in building the Beit HaMikdash and forming alliances with the countries around him, like Tirana, Sur. And some of those ways were negative in the ways that maybe he treated the people and the expectations that he had of his nation. And I'd like to suggest the Tanakh actually, the Nach, Malachim, really wants us to think about this parallel very carefully in the way that Hashem ultimately, or one of the ways that Hashem punishes Shlomo for going against the two of the decrees that Hashem told a king not to do, take too many horses and have too many wives. And what does Hashem do in Malachim Perek Yud Aleph? I'd like everyone to turn to source 7, to the right-hand part of the source sheet where it says Hadad, Malachim Aleph Perek Yud Aleph. And actually Rav Hanan Gafni in Megadim writes about this interesting comparison between Hadad and Moshe, which I'm going to point out now. When Hashem punishes Shlomo, he says he's going to tear the Malucha apart, he's going to make a division in the Malucha, but he also does something else that's very interesting. He also says, if everyone can read Pasuk Yezalit, Vayakam Hashem Satan li Shlomo, et Hadad Ha'azami Mizera HaMalachu Ve'Edom. So Hashem actually makes this enemy for Shlomo, this adversary for Shlomo, whose name is Hadad Ha'azami, or you'll see sometimes Adad. Okay, and I'd like us to read the story together. Pasuk Tetzav. Way, way back when David was fighting with Edom, okay, and when David was fighting against Edom, he killed, or Yoav, his Tzar Tzava, killed all of the males in Edom. He was there for six months, and so he had killed all of his harim in Edom. So I'm just going to make this a little bit bigger so I can actually read it. Okay, so Yoav killed, and his army, and David's army killed all of his harim in Edom, all of the male born. What happens to Adad? Hadad escaped. Vayibrach Adad hu ba'anashim adamim azeh aviv. Okay, and Hadad was a young child, but he was able to run, and he was able to escape this kind of massacre of males of his people, and he ran to Mitzrayim. Then it explains the way that they went from Midian to Paran, eventually ending up in Mitzrayim, Midian to Mitzrayim. El Paro Melch Mitzrayim, and they go to Paro Melch Mitzrayim. Paro gives them Vayitem Lo Bayit Velechem, Velechem Amar Lo Ve'eretz Atama. He gives him land, he gives him food, and he gives him a house. Vayimsa Hadad Chem Ve'enei Paro Me'od, and Hadad was very, very pleasing in the eyes of Paro, Vayitem Lo Isha, and he gives him a woman, he gives him a wife, and Achot Isha, he actually gives him somebody, the wife is the sister of his own wife, meaning a family member. And they raise the child together in Beit Paro. And then what happens? Tafsir Taf Aleph. The Hadad Shama B'Mitzrayim Ki Shachav David Im Avotav. And Hadad hears that David has passed away. He met Yoav Tzar Tzava, and Yoav has died also. So all the people who were after him during the time that David and Yoav were killing all the Tzarim in Edom, they have all died. And so what does Hadad say? Vayomer Hadad, everyone can turn to the next page, El Parash, Lachayni ve'el Chalaretzi, please send me away so I can go to my people. Vayomer lo Paro, Kimet Atach Atzarimi, V'himcham v'kesh alechad aretzacha, Vayomer lo Shilach Tzlachayni. And Paro says, why? What are you lacking, Missy? Why do you want to go back? And Hadad says, no, please, I really want to return. So basically we have this story of this man who was escaping the massacre of his people, who was escaping all of the males in his people being killed. He runs away from Midian to Mitzrayim. The ruler of Mitzrayim really likes him, gives him a wife, a child, a place to, I'm sorry, gives him a wife, gives him a place to stay, gives him food, and eventually this person, this Hadad, tells the ruler of Mitzrayim, that he really wants to go back to his home country. I mean, I think that there are very glaring similarities between the story of Hadad, the background of the story of Hadad, who is the satan of Shlomo, who is the adversary to Shlomo, and the adversary to Paro that we see in Shmos, Moshe Rabbeinu, and we'll just review some of the similarities quickly, even though I'm sure many of you have already caught them. We see that Moshe, too, was born in a very, was born in an extremely rough time, rough situation for him, where Paro also, Vayatzav Paro, Vakol Amol Emor, Kol Haben Hayibad Hayorat HaShifuhu, Vakol Abatza Chayun, Paro also wanted to kill all of the baby boys, all of the Harim in Bnei Israel. And then later on, what happens to Moshe? Moshe grows up in the house of Paro, but Moshe has to run away. Paro wants to kill Moshe, much like Yoav and David wanted to kill Hadad. And what happens? This time we have somebody, Moshe, who does the opposite. He runs from Mitzrayim to Midian, where Hadad ran from Midian to Mitzrayim. And we see the parallels also. Moshe lives with the leader of Midian, Yitro, Reuel, Chaten Moshe, whatever you'd like to call him. Moshe lives with Yitro, the leader of Midian, and he gives him bread, Tir'en Allah v'yachal lechem, in Pasuk 20. He tells his daughters, please call Moshe, call this man over, I want to feed him, I want to give him something to eat. And we also see that Yitro gives Moshe a place to live, as we know, and that Yitenet Sipora Bitah L'Moshe. And he also gives Moshe a wife, who actually is also a family member of Ispanho's daughter. And we also see the similarity coming at the end of the story, where Moshe asks permission from the leader who he was staying with, Yitro. He says, El Chana V'Ashuva El Achai Asher B'Mitzrayim. Please let me return from Midian to Mitzrayim. And what does Yitro say? He gives him permission, Lech L'Shalom. And why does Moshe want to return? What reason does Hashem give him? The same reason that Hadad had, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe v'Midian, Lech Shuv Mitzrayim, Ki Metu Kol Ha'anashim HaMevakshim Et Nafshecha. Please, says Hashem, go back to Mitzrayim, because all the people who wanted to kill you, just like with Hadad, all the people who wanted to kill him, David and Yoav, have died, just like the old Paro had died also, says Hashem to Moshe. And these similarities between these two adversaries, the adversary for Paro, Moshe, and the adversary for Shlomo, Hadad, the similarities are striking and they really can't be ignored. And they forced us, really, to go back and to re-examine, when I was talking about the similarities that we see between the Shiavud of Mitzrayim and kind of Shiavud Shlomo, or the reign of Shlomo, it forces us to go back and look at the story of Shlomo and really understand that the comparisons and the subtleties, the words that are used in the Nach to describe the reign of Shlomo, are not there by accident, and they're not just happenstance, but they're really there to force us to examine Shlomo's reign and realize that he used his power in perhaps the correct way, and in a way that was almost very similar and leaves a bad taste in our mouths, because it's similar to the way that Bnei Yisrael were perhaps treated during Shiavud Mitzrayim. And I think this comparison between the two, especially between the two adversaries, is striking, and I think that there's a lot that can really be learned from it. And I think that if we go back to our initial source number one, if everyone could just go back to it right at the top, and we see that what does Hashem mean? What is the Torah saying when it says, Rak lo yadav asusim v'lo yashiv ha'am Mitzrayim? And when the Midrash connects the two by saying that by having too many horses, that will eventually lead us back to Mitzrayim. When I initially read this passage, when I was doing this actually with an 11th grade class, we all said that it's kind of strange. What does that mean? That a king will have too many horses, and then everyone's just going to get on the horses back and ride back to Mitzrayim, up to Mitzrayim. I mean, I think we would all agree that that's not true. But the Torah is saying is that the danger isn't that we're going to physically return to Mitzrayim, but the danger of having too many horses is that we are going to spiritually, or that our melucha, our kingship and the feeling that we'll have in our country will be that, will be similar to the feeling that we had back in Mitzrayim, the enslavement that we had back in Mitzrayim, and that will lead to an unstable Malucha, and it will lead to a division in the Malucha. And I think that what we see here is something very important about Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech, as I said before, I don't want to take away from him that he was really a brilliant, brilliant king, a real tzaddik in many, many, many ways. And I think that he would be the last person, probably, that we would read these psukim about and say, oh, if Shlomo has too many horses, would I actually think that anything bad would happen? Or if Shlomo had too many wives, would I actually think that anything bad would happen? I would, of course, say that Shlomo HaMelech, with all of his amazing qualities and his abilities and his brilliance, he would never succumb to what we're talking about, to all of the things that we talked about that he did succumb to. He would never succumb to those things. Because really, having too many horses, what does that have to do with anything? And really, having too many wives, what does that have to... How can that really affect his brilliance and all, and the fact that he built the Beit HaMikdash? How can that really affect Shlomo HaMelech? And I think that what the Nach is saying is that we really have to take the Torah seriously. When the Torah puts restrictions on the king, the Torah is doing that for a reason. The Torah is saying the king should not have too much power. We have to put certain restrictions on the king because having too much power can force the king or can cause the king to use that power in a very, very negative way. And that's true for any king at all. It could be the worst king who we might expect it of, and it can also be the best king. Even Shlomo HaMelech can succumb to those kinds of things. Even just by starting off in Parak Hay with a glimmer of something, which is having too many horses, will eventually lead him down this path that is reminiscent of Paro Melech Mitzrayim, which will eventually lead to the division on the Malucha. And that's what the Torah means. Loyadelo Sistim don't even Shlomo HaMelech don't have too many horses. The Loyati that Ha'am Mitzrayim, because having too many horses can lead a nation back on the path of Mitzrayim. So that's our share for today, the comparison between Shlomo and Paro. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask me or email me or whatever. And that's all for today. Thank you so much. I'll be around for the next few minutes if you want to just write in any questions or anything like that. Feel free. Thanks so much.